Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all, from personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome back to the Mom in Mind podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On this episode, I am talking with Alexa Erickson, and she is sharing her journey through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And during her process on deciding how she wanted to birth, she chose free birth for her second birth. She's going to talk with us about what that means and what that looked like for her, and also talk about how she found comfort in writing and writing poetry and putting that into a book in hopes to help other women. Her book, Motherhood Disenchanted, adventures into the nitty-gritty, sleep-deprived, chaotic, and sometimes dark thoughts that come fluttering through the early years of mothering. And after back-to-back pregnancies and years of isolated mothering due to her location and then lockdowns, she felt a major gap in the discussion around the raw and tough, intimate moments of motherhood. She used her writing as a form of catharsis and way to work through all of those difficulties as they arose. Alexa delves into marriage, changes in her body, breastfeeding, anxiety, exhaustion, loss of self, and a whole lot more. She's on to share her story with us. So let's meet Alexa. Welcome, Alexa. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm grateful that you're going to share your story because I think there are a lot of parts of it that are good for people to hear, especially because there are certain types of birth that are thought of in certain ways. And there's a lot in here. So I'm happy for you to share. And yeah, please do start wherever you'd like with your story.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I know there's so many intricacies of birth and motherhood. So Yeah, we'll try and touch on all of it. I guess I'll start with kind of the birth of my first son. And let's see, he was born January 2019. So I was, you know, pregnant before, like the year before that. Mm-hmm. And for him, I always knew I wouldn't birth in a hospital. A lot of sense to me. And I just really value being like listened to and respected. And I don't find that in any sort of a hospital setting or oftentimes even like a doctor's office. They just kind of like, this is the job we have to do. We're going to do whatever we want in order to get that to happen. And there's a lot of like coercion, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, had knowledge of that background. I had trained as a doula in 2017. I just always loved birth and children and wanted to be like working with them in any way I could. And so I learned what a doula was and I thought, yeah, that sounds like, you know, the right avenue and like how I might be able to get more into that field. So I thought I had some pretty good knowledge there, you know, quote unquote, natural birth or it turns out there was like a lot more to learn, but which is funny because I don't know, doulas are kind of portrayed as like, I think more, of course it depends on experience and training, but my training was, it was through Dona and it was like a weekend intensive. And so really it's just like a couple days training and then boom, there you are to like go into the field to essentially be a woman's almost advocate, except you kind of also can't. It's sort of like, oh, maybe I can offer them education. But once you get into a hospital setting again, or just a setting with a medical provider, it doesn't always matter who's there. And so, yeah, that's just interesting because sometimes people are like, I'm doing a hospital birth, but I hired a doula. And I'm out the other side, being a doula and even having a doula at my home birth, you know, I can say like, well, that doesn't necessarily, you know, don't just like rely on a doula alone. That's a side note, but
no, I mean, that's interesting because there's another episode that just came out that talks a little bit about the complexities of the doula world and hospitals in particular. Yeah. So anyways, it's totally relevant. And also it's great to have support and it's also hard to be a doula.
Yes, I can agree with that. I just knew like, oh, well, then the other option is home birth. Like that's kind of what I had learned. And so I immediately hired some midwives. I met with like two or three and settled on this one, which ended up being two midwives and working together. And one had been working for many years and she had worked like uncertified as well. And then she did get her certification, like her license, I think just to like grow her clientele. And then The other one was younger and had just come out of midwifery school. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, you know, kind of the old wise ways and then like the new age, you know, thing going on, like this would be a combo. And so I had them booked at like, I don't know, 8 weeks or something, because I had also learned just from like my doula days, there's only so many home birth midwives available. Sometimes they only take one or two births. So you have to like early. So I had that booked, and it's like hindsight is where I'm coming from, but it was an interesting journey and I learned a lot. So like the idea, like the pros where I was like, oh, the meetings are going to be longer and more casual. And it's not like a doctor's office vibe. It's, you know, like a couch and it's kind of in like a yoga studio area type of thing. And they do more informed consent where, okay, here's a paper on, you know, GBS testing or why we would check your urine for proteins, et cetera, and read this. And then next time we meet, you can decide if you want to do that or not. So there were some things that in my young mind, I was like, oh, this is like good. Like, this is more in line with what I wanted. And it was interesting. My family was very like, oh my gosh, a home birth. Like, what if something happens? Like, what are you going to do? And it was like, it was very kind of like annoying to feel like I had to educate them because I, guys, I don't want to like this birth, just get on board. But something I would say is like, my, like the midwives can basically do everything except, you know, like a C-section or an epidural. An epidural is just pain relief. So, you know, that would be like a choice if I felt like going in. And a C-section would be like such an intense emergency. You know, you call an ambulance or something. But it never dawned on me that what I was saying to them was, I'm inviting the hospital into my house. I just, it's like, that was part of my defense because they're comfortable with the hospital. So I'm trying to like relay to them, oh guys, like basically, you know, they've got drugs. If you're, you know, oh God forbid you're bleeding, they can do stitches. Like, you know, they're medical professionals. Just like never clicked with me with like, I wasn't comfortable with medical professionals in a hospital. Like, why is it that different just to have them in another setting, which was just my house? So in hindsight, I'm like, oh, should have thought that through.
So sorry, if I can just like, for folks who are listening, what you're saying is that at the time you thought it would be maybe more collaborative or more holistic, or some idea about home birth being different than hospital birth, but your realization is that it was similar, but just in your home without like access to certain medical procedures.
Yes. Yeah. So in my mind, I felt like, oh, being in a hospital is unsafe and being at home would be safer because, like, my reasons didn't hold up. So basically I did like think it was going to be more holistic or more, you know, quote unquote natural or safer from that idea of like, oh, I'll have more autonomy if I'm at home and I won't have autonomy over my body if I'm in a hospital. Like if I'm at home, I'll be able to say no, or there won't be so many interventions. For me, it wasn't true. And I think for a lot of people isn't true because the term midwife, I mean, it's kind of become different now. And I know that term medwife has come out now as well. People are more familiar with it.
This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor. And it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code momandmind50 at factormeals.com/momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This podcast is sponsored by Paired. One of the things I hear weekly is how clients feel distant or not as connected to their partners, and also how they'd like to feel heard and seen by their partners. So for all you partners out there, it might be time to try Paired. It's an app that helps couples connect in a meaningful way. especially for couples who either feel disconnected, don't have time to sit down together, or who are just wanting to keep the connection going. This app is great. My husband and I are on it, and one of the things I love are the games where I answer a set of fun or interesting questions, and then he does the same, and we see where our answers line up or are different. It's a really cool way of learning something new about him, even though we've been together over 20 years. And there are a bunch of other great questions geared towards connection and understanding and intimacy that, when you share your answers, can help you and your partner understand each other better. Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/mind to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's paired.com/mind to sign up today. Let's give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here.
Are you saying that, like, it used to be more holistic and it's becoming more medicalized?
Yes. Like, now some people will say, oh, I have a midwife, but it's in the hospital.
And sure. Yeah. I've heard of midwives in the hospital.
Sure. And a lot of times they're nurse midwives. Those are usually things who could be in the hospital. So essentially it's just like a nicer name for an OB. Like, oh, maybe they're, so it's almost like gaslighting, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Yeah. And
that sucks.
Course, I can't say it's true for everybody. And more just like what I was realizing for myself. And yeah, so I would go to these appointments and I felt like, again, in hindsight, like my intuition was speaking up, where I was just kind of like, why am I here? Like, I didn't really have much to talk about. I wasn't worried about birth. I didn't feel like I needed these tests, but since they were there, okay, I'll do them. But yeah, it's just when you have a medical professional there, you put all your trust in them, I suppose. You're always look to them.
Yeah.
So let's see, my birth comes around and it's like the stormiest day of the year. And my water had broke at like 11 PM the night before. And then, you know, I let the midwives know, and it's that funny moment where I'm like, sure. Like, is that really my water breaking? Like, I know it is. Like, is this about to, are we actually going to do this? And so I didn't feel anything until maybe like six the next morning, like the tiniest of anything. But at least I was like, oh, okay. So like, it's going to happen. And it was just, it was a very chill day. I just hung out, like I cleaned and baked cookies, et cetera. And we were, my husband and I were, we were like playing cards or something. And then we were playing charades and I was like bouncing on my birth ball. And then I realized like I couldn't focus very much. And this was probably around like 4 p.m.
You've gone like a long time.
Yeah. When I say, yeah, like 6 p.m., I was like trying to feel if there's anything. And I was like, okay, I think that was something, you know, so just like very. So that's when it was like, okay, I was just kind of ignoring him. I'm like, all right, it'll, when it gets intense, it'll get intense. So yeah, probably around 4, 4:30, I'm like, oh wait, like it's kind of hard for me to focus on these cards. So I'm like, okay, I need a break from playing these games right now. And I had been texting my family. And so around then I let the midwives know, like, okay, I think it's picking up, but you know, you probably won't be hearing from me like when it's go time. And then I feel like just got intense fast. So I don't know, 10 minutes later, I was like, ran to the sink and threw up. And I told my husband, I'm like, call them back.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh my gosh, wait, like it's happening. It was, yeah, the labor was, I mean, I was never like concerned about it. And in the sense that I actually had more of a fear of breastfeeding. Those were the horror stories I had heard. So I know some people kind of have people tell them horror stories of their labor or whatever. And they're like,
yeah, I don't know why that happens, but it's so common that people tell you the, like some people tell you the worst things they've heard, and yikes.
I think it's because it's somebody finally bringing up birth, and that person may have like nobody ever really asked him how it went, anything. And they have all this like trauma trapped inside them, and they just see an opportunity to like get off their chest and to share. And I think it's something like that. Like, it's almost like, oh, I gotta spill this because like it triggered my birth. And like, now I'm thinking,
oh, sure.
It.
Yeah. I do agree with you there. For people who are sharing their personal experience, it's extra special when strangers share random stories.
Yes. I'm not saying it's necessarily right. I'm just saying, yeah, like, why do people think like, oh, you're going to give birth? Like, let me tell you about, you know.
No, I agree with that, what you were saying. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know that happens. But I had heard horror stories of breastfeeding. So I had gone to like a couple, you know, pregnancy circles, et cetera. All I heard was just how hard it was. Bleeding nipples, cracked, like all these things. So I was like never worried about birth. I was just like, oh my gosh, like what about breastfeeding after? Will I even know what to do, et cetera. So like that was the fear I had to contend with. So labor, I just like walked back and forth pretty much the entire time. And we had a birth tub. And I remember really wanting to get in it, but the midwives were kind of like, oh, not yet, which, you know, in hindsight kind of bothered me. But again, like I just really deferred my power to them because I had hired them, supposed to know what to do. What do I know? Right.
Right.
And finally they started filling it up, or my husband and my midwives got there, I think around 6:30, and I had hired a doula. And so she got there maybe at 7 p.m. or something. And that was interesting. The side note on the doula thing was I had hired a doula and she seemed very cool and nice. And then she ended up leaving to do another opportunity, like in another state when I was like 36 weeks pregnant. So I hired this other doula who I didn't really have time to like get to know as on like that deep of a level, but she seemed sweet. I didn't know how it was going to be, what I was going to need. So I want to have somebody just in case. And that's another thing that will happen with doulas, you know, they could just leave. And yeah, so the storm was happening. We lived on a mountain during that time and our water was shut off for a while as well because the power went out. And so like the pump to connect the water to the house also went out, but finally it turned back on. I was not worried about it because it happened a lot in the winter. And I was like, you know what? It's going to come back on when I need it. And it did. So I was able to have the tub, but of course the water heater could not keep up. And so they're boiling pots of water, you know, on the stove. And it felt so nice to be in the water. I wish it was hotter, but it felt really nice. And it almost like it slowed things down. It felt like less intense when I was in the water. So it didn't slow things down. It just felt less intense. And I was like, well, no, it has to be more intense for me to give birth, right? So I had this contraction, this surge that I could tell was like transition because they all felt the same. And then this one like lasted longer and this was more intense. So I called my husband back over and I was like, I want to get out because I was like, I can't just like be this comfortable giving birth. It was this weird story I had created for myself where like, oh no, it's supposed to just get more intense and more, it should be more painful almost, right? Like, it was an interesting story I told myself. So I get out and I think I walked maybe a little bit more, but it felt kind of pushy right after that, like right when I got out. And I remember being in the bathroom and holding on to the towel bar on the wall and having a huge surge and just like kind of squatting down and the towel bar breaking off the wall. And I just like threw it aside and like turned around and leaned on the counter because I was still like mid, you know, surge. And that was like really funny. And I remember the younger midwife. Okay. So I remember saying like, I'm pushing. Is it okay that I'm pushing? Which again is just like a perfect example of like deferring power and just kind of not knowing, kind of like if somebody is there, I guess it's just, and they're a medical provider, it's almost like you don't necessarily believe your body until they affirm it.
Especially so like, if it's your first.
That's something that I think is hard and I kind of don't appreciate is like women are so capable and so powerful and definitely the ones who are going to know their body best, like who are going to know if they're ready to push or not or what they're doing, and they will ignore that voice in lieu of a medical provider saying, oh no, you're not ready to push, or well, just things like that. Really quick. So I was in the bathroom and I'm pushing. I'm not fully pushing. It's kind of like my having a surge that ends in like pushing, like grunting. And so I asked them, is it okay that I'm pushing? And what did they say? I can't remember what they said the first time because it happened again. And then I asked them again, like, is it okay? Is it okay? You know? And maybe it was after the first time I asked, like the newer midwife was like, well, you know, do you want me to check you? Which it's kind of frustrating that they asked me that because they knew I didn't want that, because checking, aka like sticking your fingers up a woman's vagina to check for dilation, really tells you nothing, because you could be very little dilated and 30 minutes later give birth. You know, they can't actually tell you like how long things are going to happen. or anything like that. So,
like up until this point, like in your process of meeting with them and whatnot, did you feel supported or did you feel heard or were your preferences listened to?
Yeah, that's a great question. It felt like a little superfluous. Like it just felt like I didn't really need anything from them. So
I mean, if you know, I've heard certainly stories of midwives who are not the kind of super in tune, intuitive type. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there are people who are very in tune and listen and let you lead and all of that. But mm-hmm. this is like what you're describing, this like, I don't need, or you don't need anything from mm-hmm. them. Is that what you said? I don't know if I'm getting that right or not. You don't need anything from them. So like not feeling supported in some way.
Yeah, I guess sometimes I had questions and I didn't feel like they were necessarily answered. It was almost like they were like, well, here's like a verbatim statement on GBS or something mm-hmm. like that. So it was kind of just like, well, they're fine. But I was mostly just doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Like I hired midwives because I have to hire midwives. Mm-hmm. That's who has to be at the birth. I mean, I'm going to these prenatals because it sounded exciting and it sounded fun. The idea of kind of spending time thinking about my pregnancy sounded fun. And then I would get to them and I would just kind of be like, yeah, it wasn't super, I don't know. It's just kind of like they were doing that appointment to do the appointment again, because they had to. I was there because I had what I thought I had to be, you know. Of course, you don't have to go to any prenatals if you don't want to. I mean, that's a farce, but no, I didn't know that. That's not often talked about. So it was kind of just like a lot of twiddling my thumbs. And yeah, and I also felt like I wasn't told a lot of options in terms of like, I don't think we ever really talked about lotus birth or cord burning. It was always just like, oh, and we can do delayed cord clamping. But that was like the only thing in terms of birthing the placenta, which, you know, if people don't know what that is, a lotus birth is where you leave the placenta attached. Sometimes you put some drying herbs or salts on it and you wrap it up and you keep that attached to baby until it naturally dries out. The cord does and detaches itself, which can take a couple days. Cord burning is where you use oftentimes beeswax candles to basically like cauterize the cord instead of cut it. And that could take like 10-ish minutes, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. That's what we did for my second birth. It's very beautiful. And delayed cord clamping is where ideally you wait for the cord to be empty of blood, not pulsing, totally white. And then you would cut that cord so that all the blood from the placenta and like in the cord is going back to baby. And they have all of their blood volume, right, before you would sever that. So I, like, those are all things I learned after my first birth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I guess it really was more just like, do you have questions about this test? Do you want to mm-hmm. do this test? Mm-hmm. Which again, they're just doing their job and that's totally fine. So I'm not sure if I felt like held in kind of like a wise woman, you know, sisterly kind of way or anything. Mm-hmm. But certainly they were there if I had any questions. You know, so it was kind of like the standard prenatal care, but longer appointments. Yeah. And maybe mm-hmm. that was just like my relationship with them. I'm not sure, but I think it also just had a lot to do with like me not really having many fears to talk through. I think that, yeah, that's a good time for women to like explore the horror story that their mom passed down to them, or mm-hmm. bring up any sort of like, but if I bleed, then what happens? Mm-hmm. I just didn't. Yeah. So when she knew her midwife said, do you want me to check you? I didn't answer actually, because it was really interesting. Like I didn't want that, but because she said that, my brain was like, you know, if you say yes, then she'll at least go away. And I thought that was really interesting that my brain said that, because I could relate to like being in that very vulnerable state. I think sometimes I heard birth stories where a woman was like, well, I didn't want an epidural. They kept asking me or something. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I'd be like, huh, well, like, why don't you keep saying no or something? Because I had never gone through birth before. And being in it and being in that like very primal birth state, like birth brain, if somebody's asking you a question, you're just like, how do I end this quickest? And so it was really mm-hmm. interesting that. And so my brain said that, and I was like, you don't want that. So like, just don't answer. And my husband's like, did you hear them? And I was like, I heard them, but I just like, didn't say anything. And so then I was pushing again, and, you know, oh, can I push? And then the younger midwife said, well, you know, if you want to get on the bed, sometimes side laying can help, like the last slip of the cervix melt away or something. Like, oh, she made it sound so nice, which, you know, in hindsight was just another way for me to get on the bed so they can like see better, because I was upright in the bathroom where like they couldn't really fit in the bathroom. So I go to the bed, long story short, you know, after, I don't know, felt like 5 minutes of pushing, but I know it was longer. My son was born and he was great. And it was, yeah, such a beautiful moment. And we didn't know the gender, like the sex of the baby. So it was a boy. And that was like such a special moment. And the kind of medicalized part for me and what caused a lot of anxiety and trauma for me came after that part. So he's born, he's on my chest, you know, everything's good. But right away he's on my chest, and the younger midwife, you can tell, like, just looking back, like, goes just right into like, oh, let me do all my training. Let me do everything I learned. And like, has her gloved hand on my baby and is like rubbing my baby, where like when he first came up, like, I'm trying to put my hand on him and I can't because her hand's in the way. And like, that's a part that really sticks with me. It's these little things right after birth that like, it just is really hard. So I'm like trying to rub him, and she's like, oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead, do your thing. And I'm just like, okay, thanks for letting me touch my baby. And, you know, they're like, oh, do you want to do the breast crawl? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what is that really? Like, I had kind of heard of it, but I'm like, I don't know. Like, how long does that take? Like, do I don't know. Because I told you the breastfeeding thing, I was like a little concerned about, but he latched right away. And our breastfeeding journey, thankfully, like, just totally fine. I was so thankful because, yeah, all those horror stories. So everything was good there, but he's latched. And she, the younger midwife, was like, oh, I need to assess you. Let me see. No, we had to do the placenta birth first, I think. So I didn't know that licensed midwives have to follow essentially the same rules that, you know, an OB would have to follow, or a midwife in a hospital would have to follow the regulations of the state. So for example, your placenta has to come in the state of California, where I was at the time, like within an hour. So after, I don't know, half an hour or so, they start kind of prompting me and being like, okay, like we should get the placenta out. And I didn't feel any contractions or anything. And like, okay, we'll just like get on your knees, try pushing, like try coughing. Okay, like harder than that. And wasn't coming out. They're like, well, you haven't peed in a long time. That's probably why. Why don't you go try peeing? I couldn't pee. You know, tried like peppermint oil in the essential oil in the toilet. Like, oh, that's supposed to help. Whatever. It was not happening. And okay, so she had already, right after birth, she had already assessed me for tears, which, again, I just did not know all of this was optional. And keep in mind, I had gone through doula training, and I had even, you know, been to births, and I had a doula at my birth, which I didn't really need. And so even so, it did not cross my mind to be like, no, thanks. Or, you know, oh, if I tear, it'll heal on my own. Or I don't feel like peeing right now. Just like none of that. And so she had assessed me for tears. It was so incredibly painful. It was so painful because I was just so raw. Obviously, I had just given birth. And so she's got her hands all, you know, up around. It was so painful. And then the placenta, they're trying to do that. And she says, well, how about I just kind of follow my hand up the cord and see if maybe it's just kind of sitting in there, AKA put her like hand up my vagina. And that was the first time I was like, no, like, finally, I was like, another hand on my vagina, because I was so ready to be done because it hurts so bad. And the other midwife says, well, then we can do a shot of Pitocin. And I said, yep, sounds good. Anything, but those were my two options. There was no, well, okay, we'll just wait and see, or sounds good. It was like, either she can put her arm inside your body that just gave birth, or you can have a shot of this drug. And the shot of the drug sounded way better to me. And they did not say, okay, well, let me just tell you the risks. Let me just tell you the side effects of this shot. No, they just gave me the shot. So immediately I had these contractions, placenta came out. That's the other thing that happened, because it's coming back to me now. After she assessed me for tears and I'm trying to get the placenta out, couldn't pee, they cathetered me. They didn't ask. You know, they just said, this is what we're doing. Drained all the pee, whatever. So that's, I was so raw from all of that touching.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Mm-hmm. So get the shot of Pitocin, and then you think, oh, okay,
so this is, none of this was discussed beforehand. You, at any point, you weren't given, so like, these are the potentials. These are some scenarios. Not that every provider in every setting can go over every eventuality, but it doesn't sound like at any point you got information to make an informed decision.
No, there's no informed consent. And also, like, keep in mind this, there was no emergency. So there's plenty of time to just,
right,
say, do you have any questions about that? Are you sure you'd like to do that? Would you like to know the risks versus benefits? Would you like to wait? You know, just none of that. And okay, so get the Pitocin, et cetera. And I'm okay, can I just snuggle my baby now in my head, you know? But no, because in California, it was also quote unquote required to do a newborn screening test, which is where they prick your baby's heel and squeeze it to get blood and fill this little paper. And it took so long, so much squeezing, multiple pricks. My baby was screaming. And this was right after I had gotten the Pitocin. And I felt an emotional shift where I just turned off because I was getting, I was about to have like a panic attack from
that. Yeah, I mean, probably so overstimulated at that point.
Yeah, I was getting hot. I could feel like my breathing kind of shallowing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can't break down. Like, I can't lose it in front of these people. And so I just like disassociated. And that was the start of like my very difficult kind of intro to motherhood. I think something that's not discussed is that Pitocin has a very, very high correlation with postpartum depression and anxiety. Like, in my mind, this is not science. In my mind, it's like almost a guarantee you're going to get it if you get Pitocin. But as far as actual, you know, facts,
incidents,
I have to check, but it is like 90% or something. It's out there. You can Google it.
And add a resource in.
Yeah. And the resource, I think I even have it linked in my poetry book, which we'll get to, because it was just a very intense time. And there was so much like dark mixed in with the light, you know, like here I was like very excited to have my baby, so excited to take care of him. And just like the anxiety that I got from Pitocin and also just from these midwives kind of indicating like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, welcome to motherhood. You don't have a say, and let us tell you what you should be doing, et cetera.
It doesn't sound very trauma-informed, like a trauma-informed approach that these particular providers had.
Yeah. And even meeting afterwards with them, you know, they do a couple meetings afterwards, like I think it's 24 hours or 48 hours and whatever. And I remember feeling so lost and feeling like sad and upset and them having really no suggestions or resources or any like anything to say. So I ended up turning to writing. Like, I'm a writer, I'm a poet. I've just done that as long as I can remember as a way to kind of uncover what I'm feeling or just kind of like letting emotions out. And so that was, thank gosh I had that lifeline. We were also very isolated because we were up on the mountaintop. So I would just be, you know, like nursing my baby in the middle of the night in his room crying and just writing down, like, not understanding why I felt that way. And it felt so hard. And social media was like, this was 2019. It was finally like very prevalent, but still kind of like only certain messaging was getting through. And the messaging that I was getting, like what I mean by that is like, I feel nowadays there's kind of more holistic people using social media, but at that time, it didn't really seem like there was. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the messaging I was getting was like, your baby should be sleeping this amount of time, you know, like motherhood should be great, etc.
All that stuff. Like not including in all of that messaging, it doesn't include, it's like in a vacuum. It doesn't include that. I mean, from what you're describing, and you had traumatizing situation after birth that, and I don't know if at that time you clocked it as like a traumatizing thing. You're just feeling it.
Yeah.
You're feeling the feelings and not understanding why you feel this. And then social media is telling you you're supposed to just feel awesome. And
yeah. And if your baby doesn't sleep that much, like I was so worried that I was like damaging my baby. And so I started writing, and a couple times I shared on my social media, these kind of raw things. And I had such incredible feedback. Like women would message me and be like, thank you. Thank you for sharing this. I needed to hear this. Like, you know, they were crying all day yesterday and I feel like a horrible mom and I just don't know what's happening, you know, or even, you know, about their births. And it was so beautiful. And I right then and there, I was like, I'm going to write a book. Like I'm going to publish these poems. Like women need to know it's not all like rainbows and sunshines, and that doesn't make you like a bad mom. Mm-hmm. And also just the companionship, I guess you could say, of other women going through the same thing was so helpful. And that's also the messaging I was getting was like,
sure. Yeah.
Not like, oh, here, let me fix it for you. It's just like, thank you for just like saying, ah, this sucks today. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And so I finally published that poetry book this past July. So July, 2023.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah. I wrote most of it then, but my kids are a year apart. So I actually got pregnant again around, I think it was almost 5 months postpartum. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, was kind of sick and all that. And so I paused the book. Yeah. You know, but I'm so glad I did, because for my second birth, I ended up doing a free birth, which is no medical professionals present, like including a doula or anything. It was just me and my husband and he had just turned one, my son. And they were actually in the other room when I like actually gave birth to, which was so funny. But, and that all happened because through my writing, I was able to process, you know, this trauma and trust my intuition more, learn more about myself. Mm-hmm. And then also just through research, I used the Free Birth Society as a pretty good resource for just digging more into birth, like the industrial obstetric model and a lot of the gaslighting, et cetera. And like through that and Women I Met, et cetera, just helped me realize how powerful women really are and how like pathologized birth is in the medical system and how it doesn't need to be that way. Mm-hmm. My second birth was, I mean, it was so healing and really helped a lot of that trauma, just not having anybody in my space that I didn't want there who was poking or prodding or making me question myself. And it was so peaceful and just, I mean, just like regular, you know, just like normal, just birth. Like it was just. It
sounds like there was some sort of inklings that you were talking about in first birth where like you didn't have the kind of fears, you didn't have the questions, you didn't, I don't know if you said this specifically, like need from the midwives, them to answer, you know, a bunch of questions and stuff like that. That information from that time helped inform your decision and your approach the second time.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no rules or regulations. So that felt right. And I also didn't do like prenatal care in the sense of going into a doctor's office. Of course, I cared for myself prenatally and took, you know, supplements I thought felt good and things like that. But there was no like, oh, are you sure you don't want to do this test? Like, do you want to kill your baby? Like that kind of manipulation from any sort of medical providers. And so it was really wonderful to even be able to include that in my book to kind of the bookend of that positive birth story as well.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you mind if I read a poem? I might read two or three. They're short. So this was after my first birth. This is poem 3 in my book. Gentle voices expand the room. 6 weeks since my blood, your body, and our souls intertwined. The tears of anxiety and despair refuse to stay silent. My throat closes quickly. I stand defeated, handing the reason for my cracking composure to my husband. Quickly, I shuffle to the bathroom, determined to cry alone. I begin to count round objects, my breathing leveling with each one. Toilet paper, cup, soap, doorknob. There aren't enough round objects in the world. So that's kind of taking you to like that feeling of kind of just being a new mom and feeling a bit lost and not really understanding what it's about. I mean, of course, there's so many hormones, but just feeling like, oh, 6 weeks after birth, like I should have it by now. I should be like, okay. And in reality, my first son was not a sleeper. Mm-hmm. And I just was sleep deprived and sure. was not nourishing myself and was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. Shouldn't I know what I'm doing? This one is more about like my relationship to that postpartum body and, you know, back-to-back pregnancies. And I have little white slivers where my skin is stretched to let the sunlight through. The entire time growing you, my uterus could not contain the joy, the gratefulness, the other world your spirit was pouring in from. I look down to those slivers that pucker near my hip, and it reminds me, I have done more than anyone could think possible. Why did my mind rush back to worthlessness the minute you were born? Why do I live in a world that pushes aimless productivity while I bleed, cramp, cry, leak, and feed two humans at once? Why does the world not see the most important job is the one they refuse to acknowledge? Parenthood and stretch marks.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing both of those. It really gets to that really deep emotional undercurrent of, you know, what you were dealing with. And I appreciate you sharing your story and what you went through and this, you know, people who are hearing your story and are resonating with you to be able to know that somebody else had a similar experience is really powerful. So yeah. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I just hope, you know, the women listening to this know how strong they are. And if they're in that moment of feeling not strong, try writing about it, try getting those thoughts out, even if they're not pretty. And, mm-hmm. you know, just it can help to put these things on paper so they're not just like sitting in our brain over and over again.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You can find more from Alexa on her website, mamafreebirth.com, and on Instagram, mamafreebirth. And I'd like to put a reminder out there to all of you who are already subscribers. Make sure you go to the app that you listen to this podcast on. Make sure that you're still getting the podcast downloaded directly to you. For some people, those have stopped. And I want to make sure that you're getting all of these episodes delivered to you as soon as they come out. And if you're new to this podcast, please do go subscribe and get all of the episodes of Mom and Mind downloaded directly to you. There is a huge catalog of episodes for you to look through and find ones that resonate for you. I'm so grateful that you are here listening and you continue to listen to this podcast, as hearing stories and sharing stories is so important in this new parenting process, and it also helps support this podcast to keep going. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time. Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.